Your SteveJonesShow.com audio is loading. SteveJonesShow.com audio is sponsored by Rick Weibel at REW Insurance and Financial Services, LLC. Call them at 800-609-9484 or visit them online at REWfinancial.com.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome once again to the Steve Jones Show. Kevin Hearn back from a little time off. Steve will be joining us shortly from the Sunbury Motors studio. We'll catch up on everything that's been going on in the world of football, college football more specifically.
Yes, indeed. Well, first of all, the world wishes to welcome you back.
Thank you.
We had actually several people ask if you quit.
And then we're disappointed to find out otherwise.
Well, I had to talk him off the ledge when I explained it to him.
I know. I didn't mean to disappoint everybody.
But welcome back. It's great to have you back. And
it's okay. I'd like to say it's great to be back. But No, just kidding.
I'm sure you were. Yes. No, today's show, by the way, let's get to what we have coming up. Another show where we just weren't able to accomplish anything.
It's nice to know some things haven't changed.
That's right. Greg Brown, the play-by-play voice of the Pirates, will be with us at 3:35. Then the next hour, we'll have Tyler Mann, who is the play-by-play voice of the Altoona Curve, because Garrett Cole, the first overall pick in last year's draft, pitched last night. Get a read from him on that. Tomorrow, Penn State quarterback Matt McGloin. Other than that, we apologize.
Well, I was just looking up stuff on the four-team college football championship, now getting the okay from Notre Dame so we can all move forward now.
Do you think the college football world really cares if Notre Dame signs off on it?
Well,
I mean, seriously, I mean, talk about playing. I mean, you have to look at them at some point and say, hey, look, whether you want to or not, we're doing this.
Right. Listen, you decided to go out on an island. All right. You're on your own. Here's what we're going to do. If you want to play along, fine. But I thought it was funny. The article that is on the Four Letter Network discussed the fact that the Bowl Championship Series and Notre Dame have approved it.
Well, they're a part of it. I mean, you know, they're a part of what's going on. It's the 11 conference commissioners plus Jack Swarbrick, the athletic director at Notre Dame. I mean, that's the way they've set it up. I mean, I noticed they didn't ask Navy or Army or Brigham Young to sign off on it. They're the other three independents in college football.
You're understanding my point completely now, aren't you?
Yes. Yes. The other three independents were not consulted on this, but one was, which is fine. I understand. But the days, it's not the 40s, 50s, and early 60s any longer. You know, I mean, Notre Dame is a Division I program, but they aren't the player they used to be.
Well,
I think that's fair enough.
And they've chosen to be that. They've chosen to be independent. They continually choose to be that way because they want to keep all the NBC money to themselves. They have their own television contract, and that's great.
First of all, they don't keep all the NBC money to themselves.
Oh, really?
That is actually a fallacy.
I did not. I thought they got all of it. Now, where does the rest of it go then?
No, every game, half of the game money goes to the opponent.
Okay, so the opponent does get some money from that.
Yes.
All right. Well, then, yes. but still. You know, they have their own television deal.
Yes, they do.
You know, and really nobody else really has that as a team, maybe as a conference, but not as a team. And then to be consulted about the the BCS situation, again, there's too many letters in that. That's my thought in that. To be consulted about that is just BS, yes.
Well, they're going to be a part of it at some point. I mean, and in order to keep them a part of it, I mean, they know they have to be a part of it. They say, "Well, we're going to stay away from it." Guess what? Nobody is going to care, and then they're going to get pressure from their own alumni and from the Subway alumni to be a part of it. What I have wanted to see is that you utilize the bowl games for the semifinal in some combination, and then you bid out the championship game to an independent. Now, that independent may be an existing bowl game, but they just host the game later. In other words, let's take one. Glendale, University of Phoenix Stadium. Popular location, domed, natural grass. A lot of people love the venue, right? They love the venue. That's one.
Well, there is one in particular that is ready to do that. As the information came out today, that exactly as you had talked about a month or so ago here on the program, they want to do a 4-team playoff using the existing bowl series, rotating it through those series games, and then bidding out the national championship game. Those four teams would be picked by a committee, similar to the way basketball's done.
I think it has to be done that way. I'm sick and tired of the BCS standings.
Yep.
And the conference champion thing doesn't wash with me either. If you were to do last year on conference champions, you would have had number one LSU, number three Oklahoma State, number five Oregon, check it, number six Oregon, and number 10 Wisconsin.
Right.
Those were the four highest-ranked conference champions. You're saying, what are you talking about? Alabama didn't win its division. They were number two. Stanford was four. They didn't win their division. Oregon did. Next up, Arkansas. They finished third in their division. They were fifth. Boise State did not win the conference. TCU did. South Carolina, they lost in the championship game to LSU. And Kansas State finished second to Oklahoma State. That is what happened to the other teams. That's why you would have ended up with 1, 3, 6, and 10 under that scenario.
Well, I think it also eliminates a lot of teams. As you mentioned, TCU, Boise State, they would kind of be eliminated in this, I think, because when you throw in conference and schedule, then you may take a big conference that has, like an Alabama, well, here's an example, Alabama LSU. You know, that championship game now doesn't happen because one of them didn't win the conference.
Well, and now by having a selection committee, that actually enhances the chances of a Boise State.
Right, and they can afford a stumble along the way and still in a conference game and still maybe get the bid for that. Now, it's not going to be easy, but because they're not forced to win the conference to get the bid, that's not the only way you can get there. That's the point I'm trying to make.
And see, because remember, selection committees over the years in basketball have found a soft spot for the Butlers of the world. So actually, for the Boise States, this is something that I think actually helps them out.
Well, Jerry Jones is really excited about this idea. He's going to put together a nonprofit entity with the Cotton Bowl to put in a bid to host it in Dallas at Cowboy Stadium.
Well, that was the first one I was going to say. You know darn well that he was going to get involved in this. That's one of the reasons why, for example, the Cotton Bowl moved over there. That's why he has had Oregon LSU in the Cowboy Classic, and I can't remember what the first year was. But Oregon and LSU played in the first one. Alabama and Michigan are playing in this year's.
Wasn't there a bowl game with Texas in the name of it, though? Like the Texas Bowl or something like that? I don't know. Maybe I'm just thinking.
No, the Texas Bowl's in Houston.
Oh, okay. There is one, right. Then. I was thinking of it.
Yeah, but the Cotton Bowl's in Cowboy Stadium.
Right. They moved it.
Yeah, they moved it over there. So
now, here are some other interesting possibilities. Ford Field in Detroit. Hosted a Super Bowl. You know, they would think they know how to do that.
Oh, Georgia Dome, Superdome, Lucas Oil Stadium, Cowboy Stadium.
Now, here's the ones that I thought
that I thought
might be a wee bit of Edmonton. A stretch. Everbank Field in Jacksonville.
Hosted a Super Bowl.
Right. Raymond James in Tampa.
Yeah.
And the Edward Jones Dome in St. Louis.
Possible.
Those are ones that business people or politicians have expressed interest in hosting a game, hosting that game.
Think you'll see at that time of the year there'll be a real feeling about putting a place in a retractable dome. I think you'll see that. I think that the retractable dome part will be certainly important. It'll be interesting to see if the Rose Bowl bids for it.
You know, I was thinking about that, too, just because of it being in the Rose Bowl.
Yeah.
And then having two big games there in a year.
And the Rose Bowl, by the way, is being renovated as we speak. Is being extensively renovated as we speak.
But you know what's a shame is there's no place in New York to host one of these games.
Well, they spent all that money on MetLife Stadium in New Jersey, and it's not a retractable dome.
Right.
And to be honest with you, Kevin, New York and college football don't mix.
Really? I mean, I'm just thinking from a TV market alone, I mean, there would be money to be made there.
Then you want people to watch because they'd be watching TV.
No, that's true.
New York, you know, one of the reasons why Eastern football has struggled so much is that college football in the East is a neat thing. It's pro football that drives the engine in the East.
Be plenty of hotels, though.
Well, all these places have hotels. So,
although Indianapolis does have to, you have to admit, does have a really attractive setup. With most of those hotels being right there near the stadium.
Right. Well, they do. I mean, between all the hotels in between Conseco Fieldhouse, or was it Bankers Life Fieldhouse now, and Lucas Oil Stadium, it's a great area to host it. There's no question about it. And I think the Super Bowl came off with great ease, and the Big Ten, of course, has four more years to go. In its deal with Lucas Oil Stadium. So that's a possibility as well, but I also think that they like the idea of being down south.
Well, I was going to ask you, set everything aside, just as a football fan, wouldn't you like to see one bowl game be played with elements other than just rain and sun?
Well, we're going to find out in the Super Bowl, aren't we?
Right. There's a great example.
Well, we're going to find out that the SEC doesn't want this.
Of course not.
They don't want this. And you know what? I'll be honest with you. Do the fans want it? If it's a home field, that's great. But if you're not going to have a home field, you're going to have neutral. I mean, you don't think, if you did a poll of everybody in Beaver Stadium saying, would you like to go south in December? For a semifinal game or January 1st, they all want to go south.
Well, sure.
I mean, believe me, we go to a bowl game, I get off the plane, I go, oh, thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Well, all right, let's say for our argument here, for the sake of our discussion here, what if they were to host the national championship game at Beaver Stadium, and it's two teams that are nowhere near our location, our region, would you still go to see it? Would you pay to see it? That would be the better question. Would you pay top dollar to see it?
I'd cover it, and no, I wouldn't go see it.
Yeah, I'm not sure I would either.
I'd watch it on TV.
And the reason?
Temperature's going to be 25 degrees.
Exactly.
And Alabama is going to play Texas. I'd think about it, but would I want to pay? Okay, let's take a number. $100?
Right.
And I had to pay? Plus the parking? Plus the $150 for the parka? No.
For the Nanook parka, yeah. But
you know, so you can sit there on TV.
But I'd be more than happy to watch it on TV and then look at the game being played in the elements. That I would enjoy. You're right. I agree with you.
I think on TV that's intriguing. I think in person when you don't have a vested interest in it, the intrigue leaves. The intrigue leaves. I think. So, I mean, that's how I feel about it. But you need a selection committee. This mumbo jumbo about, look, they'll get numbers and data and things like that. But I'll give you an example. Oregon-Stanford. Stanford went to the BCS. Oregon went to the Rose Bowl. They both went, but Stanford was ranked higher. I'm on a selection committee. I might pick Oregon instead of Stanford as one of the four. You want to know why?
Why?
Oregon beat them.
All right.
Not only did they beat them late in the year, 53-30. They kicked the living daylights out of them.
Say it wasn't even close then.
Sorry, I mean, I always laugh, well, you know, the head-to-head thing. Excuse me, that shows that you're better. You beat them.
And a lot of times, if it's in the same conference, you beat them for the conference win.
Exactly. 1-800-795-9565, 1-800-795-9565, for the beautiful Sunbury, and yes, air-conditioned Sunbury Motor Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Our phone line at 1-800-795-9565, powered by Lenape Solar. Go to lenapesolar.com. And Rick Weibel, REW Financial and Insurance, our Thursday sponsor. Always great to have Rick on board, one of the truly great guys that I personally have a lot of confidence in. Greg Brown, Pirates announcer, 3:35. Then the next hour, Tyler Mon, Altoona Curb broadcaster, and the starter Garrett Cole. Coming up tomorrow, we will have Matt McGloin on the show.
Who's he again? Who's he again?
He's the guy that sweeps up Metler Field, Lebronto Park.
Oh, that'll be great.
Yeah, yeah. He'll tell us exactly how much trash is collected at the night and so forth. It'll be great. Yeah.
I think the heat's been getting to you.
Back with more of this broadcast extravaganza that they paid dearly for after this on WKOK.
This is it! Sunbury Motor Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza is having the automotive event of the year. Now through Monday, every new Ford, every new Hyundai, and every new Lincoln will be discounted like never before. And every pre-owned vehicle will have Sunbury Motors' lowest price promise, which saves you up to $5,350 under Carfax recommended prices. Choose from over 25 2012 Ford Escapes that get up to 28 mpg, starting at just $19,880. And the all-new 2013 Escape is in stock for immediate delivery. The 23 mpg Ford F-150 is as low as $24,989. The 2012 Hyundai Sonata is discounted up to $2,000, down to $21,495. Plus, every new vehicle from SMC comes with an extra set of tires. If you're going to be shopping for a new or pre-owned vehicle, choose from over 450 vehicles at one location. All with prices clearly marked at Sunbury Motors in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury. Don't miss the event of the year, now through Monday.
If you don't love the Tramps, you won't love this bump. John Travolta as Tony Manero.
Got my white suit on.
Might I recommend something darker? It's considered to be slumming.
Well, it might help, yeah. Probably won't.
Just trying to...
I appreciate it.
Just trying to help out. Yeah, yeah. Well, that is the story on the BCS on this day. We're going to hear from Greg Brown of the Pirates Radio Network at 3:35, and then we'll go from there. Then Tyler Mohn a little bit later in the 4 o'clock hour.
We talk about the Phillies a lot on this program, so we thought we'd balance it out a little more.
Well, we talked a lot about the Phillies, but, I mean, the Pirates have been actually a great story. They happen to be a story of a team that is limited in many ways, yet they have been able to carve out three games over 500, 2.5 out in the division. I think they're 2 out in the wild card. The Giants are the wild card leader. And last year they put themselves in the same spot, and a lot of people talked about how the pitching collapsed. Look, everybody's pitching at some point. Like any part of the ball club, takes a hit during the course of the year. You can't expect 162 games of great in one area. There'll be a point where it'll take a hit. The really good teams that make the playoffs are the ones that during the course of the season, when that bump happens, something else compensates for it, a.k.a. you're hitting. Well, that's what hurt the Pirates last year. When their pitching finally gave out, they didn't have enough hitting to compensate for it. So far, the pitching's been outstanding. Now they have to see if they hit that bump on the road, whether they have enough hitting to get the job done. We're going to talk to Greg Brown about all that and more about the Pirates. And then Gerrit Cole was the first overall choice in the Major League Draft last year, a pitcher out of UCLA. And he made his Double-A debut last night in Altoona for the Curve. We'll get an update on him. And then tomorrow, we'll go. And by the way, Luis Heredia, the bonus baby of the Pirates, pitches tonight in State College. He's 17 years old. 17. He has the baby face of a 17-year-old, but he's 6'6", 230 pounds, and looks like he could take Kevin Hugo and toss it over a hedge.
Wow. 6'6".
He's 6'6", 230 pounds.
How does that not intimidate you if you're a hitter?
And when you look out, you see the baby face.
Oh, there you go. Then maybe that's it.
Now, he is not a guy who's going to go out and strike out nine guys in three innings. But he's done a lot of work with Justin Message, the pitching coach here. We'll have Justin Message on the show tomorrow talking about the kid and how he approaches being a pitching coach at this level. Sarah's next with the news here on WKOK. Our go-to girl whenever we need to find out information.
Hi, I'm Rick Weibel from REW Financial. I strive to take an eagle-eye approach to your financial future to help give you the freedom to make powerful decisions. I work with you to help you find the discipline you need to get the results you want. I don't believe in just setting it up and letting things go. I'll always be looking to see how we can make things better. REW Financial is an independent company committed to the highest standards of integrity, ethics, and value throughout your financial journey. See us in Lewisburg and Brook Park Farm. Call 800-609-9484 or visit us online at rewfinancial.com.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Cardinals-Tigers, they're tied right now as interleague play continues. And the team, even though they've lost two in a row, that's taken the greatest advantage in the Yankees. The Yankees have just taken the National League and they've bludgeoned them. Thus, they built a 10-game streak at one point. And until the Braves finally won back-to-back games, looked unstoppable. A team that has surprised, I think, everyone again, and have done so for the second consecutive year, the Pittsburgh Pirates. 35-32. They are three games over 500. They're in second place, 2.5 games back of the Reds in the National League Central, and right now 2 games back of the Giants in the wild card at this point, and the Twins tonight. We bring in the play-by-play voice of the Pittsburgh Pirates, Greg Brown, who does an outstanding job with them. Greg, welcome to the show. Let's talk about the pitching part of it, because the Pirates seem to have that combination of solid starting pitching, what very few teams have, solid middle relief in 6, 7, and 8, and then, of course, the great closer in Joel Hanrahan. It seems like that combination for them has been the combination that's put them on top.
Well, it is so critical. That's the word. It's the reason why the Pirates are just a couple of 2.5 games back in the division, I think just a half game back of the wild card. You know, they just get any little bit of offense, Steve, this club could take off. If it's the pitching that really got them into first place last year and kept them there through the summer anyway. And it was the collapse of the pitching staff that dropped them to the bottom of the division last year. I don't see that happening this year because of the balance that you talked about. The starters, the middle relievers, the end guys, Grilly and Hanrahan have just been almost lights out. You know, I think the one thing that I would like to see, and I talked to Clint Hurdle about this yesterday, I'd like to see the starters go a little bit more than 5 and 6. It'd really be nice to see them go 7 on most nights. I think the Pirates are one of only a handful of clubs in baseball yet to have a complete game from their starters. I think Clint Hurdle's pretty quick with the hook, understandably so, because it's been working for him and the club. They've gotten a lot of wins because of it. But so if there's one area that I'm kind of watching, maybe not concerned about, but definitely keeping an eye on, and that is the starters. They need to go just a little bit more consistently than they have. But overall, it's been sensational.
I think most people, when they observe baseball, would probably feel that the weakest part of the majority of teams in the major leagues would be the bridge guys, the guys that get you through 6, 7, and 8. That's where the weakest part of most teams happens to be, and that really has determined many races. What has it been about the Pirates' bridge guys that really has impressed you in their approach when they have to take you through the critical 6th, 7th, and 8th innings?
Well, I guess I don't know if it's as easy as this, Steve, but because I'm not a mechanical guy, I can't break things down in that regard. I mean, most middle relievers are hard throwers in baseball. They've got good stuff, and I guess the Pirates just happen to have guys with better stuff than most teams. But I do recall a conversation with pitching coach Ray Searidge in spring training when asked him what the difference he believes will be in 2012. This was, again, in March, and I'm simplifying it. I understand that, but for someone who basically considers himself a fan and not necessarily an expert in pitching, I'll go with this. His mantra was going to be get the ball to Joel. Get the ball to Joel. I don't care whether you're a starting pitcher or whether you're a middle guy or a setup guy, just find a way, any way, to get the ball to Joel Hanrahan. And that comes with an unselfish attitude. And it also comes with guys that don't necessarily have to know what their, quote, role is. Now, there have been times this year when Jason Grilli has not pitched exclusively in the 8th. He's pitched in the 7th and at times gotten some outs in the 6th. So it's everybody very unselfishly taking the baseball from Hurdle, from that starter, and getting critical outs whenever necessary, whatever inning that is, with the idea that they might not get a win, they might not get noticed, but the Pirates will get a win if they get the ball to Hanrahan and he gets his save. And so, again, I know that's simplifying it, but I think that's awfully important because I do know that over the years I've heard relief pitchers say, well, you know, I've struggled a little bit because I'm not really sure of my role right now. Sometimes I'm middle relief, sometimes I'm set up. Maybe once I find what that niche is, then I'll get better. Well, there's none of that from the Pirates bullpen. Each guy just is looking to get outs. And it's also a good mix, too, by the way. Whether it's Cruz, what he has, Tony Watson from the left side, Jared Hughes had really hard sinker and a really good heart-breaking slider. Juan Cruz still gets it up to the mid-90s, pushing 36, 37 years old. Grilli, we know what he has done. And even Chris Rieseau, not a mid-90s guy, but a strike thrower. Everybody has their role. They know that the bottom line is it's getting the ball to Joel Hanrahan.
Interesting you bring that up because there was a game, and I believe it was, I want to say, 10 days ago, and you were on the broadcast, and Joel Hanrahan had been used 2-3 days in a row, and it was brought up in another tight Pirate game. Would Clint Hurdle use Joel Hanrahan? And, of course, you had talked to him, Greg, and you said, absolutely not. He won't. And it turned out they brought in Jason Grilli, and he closed, and the Pirates won. Give us an idea, the mind of Clint Hurdle, where he is managing not the moment, but he's also managing the season at the same time.
Well, I think he's been great at that. Last year, Steve, he had a hard set rule that he would not use a relief pitcher after 3 straight games. And that was a hard, fast rule, and I think he stuck to that. I don't believe I recall one time where anybody was used more than 3 consecutive days. This year, he kind of raised eyebrows when he casually mentioned his role is going to be now 2 straight days. And he, for the most part, has kept to that. There have been less than a handful of times when he has gone beyond 2 straight games with his relievers. And he has said, you know, I'm tied to these guys more than at the arms. I'm tied to them as human beings. And in addition to that, the statistics have shown that they are less effective after two straight days, and that includes Hammerhand. And so I think one thing about Hurdle, and I do believe only a handful of managers have the luxury of not having to, quote, answer to the media or the front office. And Hurdle is one of those select few. Jim Leland is one. Of course, Bobby Cox for years, La Russa, I think Ron Washington. But many of the young managers or managers that don't have as much experience and as big a resume, they can't make their rules. They have to answer to the media and to the front office, whereas Hurdle comes with that background that suggests, you know, he has won in the past, he went to a World Series, he's had success. He can kind of pretty much make his rules. And so he says, come heck or high water, I'm not going to ruin these guys. I'm not going to pitch them more than two straight days. That's the way I'm going to be. And if we lose a game because of it, so be it. We'll be better off because of it. We'll win more down the road if we lose one night because I don't go to a certain reliever. Luckily, perhaps, or just he's got the right touch, the Pirates have won even with that mindset. So he's played that that card, and it's worked for him, Steve. It's worked for him and for the club. So he's kept his arms fresh, and they still won. They haven't had to sacrifice much because of it.
You've mentioned Joel Hammerhand several times during the course of our conversation. He comes over from Washington. Eventually, he takes the closer's role and, of course, made the All-Star game last year. When you've talked the race there, and we had Ron Cook on the show a couple of weeks ago, and he says, Steve, there's nothing worse than losing a game in the ninth inning.
You know. You sound exactly like him. That's true.
Well, and he's absolutely right. There really is nothing worse than losing a game in the ninth inning. This guy makes sure it doesn't happen. When you've talked to Ray Surge and you've talked to Clint, what does he bring to the table, not just with physical gifts, but also intangibles that make a great closer, in their view?
Well, you know, I learned a few years ago, Steve, from Tommy Sand. You remember the former Pirates first base coach,
right?
Long time on Leland's staff. And he and I were having a conversation on a flight one time on the West Coast. And you remember when we had Jason Schmidt on the team?
That's right.
The starting pitcher. And he was okay, but there were times he would be getting hurt and they'd have to shut him down. And Tommy made the suggestion in a conversation with me. I think Bob Walk was there on this long flight, that, you know, we're just, as we often do on these flights, just kind of play rotisserie baseball. And what would you do? And, you know, how about Jason Schmidt? What if they would try him as a closer? At that time, the Pirates didn't have a real good closer. And I made the suggestion that Schmidt didn't have the mindset. But, you know, a great guy, one of my favorite Pirates ever, Jason Schmidt, just a good guy. But I didn't think he was tough enough. And I said, so I dismissed the idea. And Tommy Sands said, you know who is one of the nicest guys of all time and would shock you to know that he has a similar mindset to Schmidt's? No, I didn't. He's Rob Nen. And I was stunned. Because Rob Nen at the time was a lights-out closer, and for years with the San Francisco Giants was the end of the game guy. That just, my idea of this guy, having not met him, was, man, he's a tough guy,
menacing,
a tough, hard-nerved guy. But lo and behold, he said he's one of the nicest. You wouldn't believe how nice a guy this is. You wouldn't consider him to have this tough closer's mentality. Well, so that long story to tell you, my mindset has changed over the years. That I really don't care whether the guy is a nice guy, tough guy. Jared Hughes, we bring this up.
Right.
Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, nice as can be. All of a sudden, this growl, this face, this animal look to him when he takes the mound, and I'm gonna kill you. I'm gonna get these out. I think Hammerhand is just a very nice guy, but he does want to get out. The bottom line is, he throws strikes. He throws hard. He's got a breaking ball that they have to be aware of, that slider, an occasional changeup, whatever it might be. He's got the idea that I'm going to get out with this mid to upper 90s fastball, and when they least expect it, I'm going to throw this hard breaking ball they have to protect, and I'll get strikeouts with it if necessary. he's learned how to pitch with a great arm. And it's what the Pirates have, what a lot of teams don't have, is that, quote, lights-out closer. And Hanrahan is that.
He certainly is. Now let's get to the other side. For the psyche of the fans, I thought it was a great management move as to how they handled Andrew McCutchen. To his credit, he has now made them, at least through the initial stages of this deal, look like geniuses. We're watching a truly special talent. You watch him on an everyday basis. Give us an idea of the privileges that it is to watch this develop before your eyes.
Well, I will say I'm no genius, but I did say in early spring training, just having watched what he did over the winter, occasionally I would see him come up to Pittsburgh for some events. I talked to him about a mutual friend that we had who happened to be working out at the same location as he, near the Orlando area. And there was a commitment there, Steve, that I saw from McCutchen that showed me he wanted to be great. And this is before the contract extension. And so occasionally I would be on talk shows and be asked, if there's one guy, and it looks obvious now, but if there was one guy, I said it was going to be my kind of pick to click, who look out for National League, it was Andrew McCutchen. I felt before this year that McCutchen had actually taken almost a step in there. I mean, took the National League by storm, and was good the next couple years. But I really felt like there was so much more there in every facet of his game, and I think he determined this off season he was going to try and lead this team to the promised land, and he just had a commitment unlike ever before. He came into spring training in incredible shape, got stronger, had the commitment not only that he was going to be an outstanding offensive player, driving in runs, driving the ball into the gaps, hitting home runs, but also the stolen base commitment is there like never before. Just every facet of his game has taken a huge step forward. And he's also one of those rare players that when you come to the ballpark, you say to yourself, you know, this guy could do something very special that I haven't seen before. He does it with a grace. He does it without being a hot dog, which is it grites me to see these guys just try and get on these highlight shows at night every night just by making these great diving, tumbling catches unnecessarily. McCutchen doesn't do that. He does it with a grace that we haven't seen in a long time. And there's even more there. So it's just he's just really now reaching the surface of this greatness, and it's only going to get better. He's going to be an all-star this year. I hope he's a starter. He's made progress as we continue to push that MLB.com, you know, vote 25 times. Pittsburghers, Western Pennsylvanians, Pirate fans across the country are starting to vote for him, and I would love to see him be a starter in Kansas City. Even if he's not, he'll be there. And he's getting national attention, and he's helping the Pirates deep into the summer, talk of contention. He's the guy that's led them there. Now other guys are jumping on his bandwagon. Pedro Alvarez, Barajas, Walker, they're all starting to come on board. But since day one, McCutchen has been Mr. Consistent and just so much fun to watch, just a great, great talent.
Well, he should start in the All-Star game.
Yeah, I agree.
And beyond that, because, look, in that lineup, he's the one that has the target on his chest, and you know they're trying to pitch around him to get to other people, and he won't let them do it. That's what impresses me about him. He knows he's the guy in his own quiet way. They know he's the guy, and they're trying to get around him to get to other people, and he doesn't allow them to do it because he is so talented.
Point, Steven. That's why the reason why the Milwaukee Brewers and the St. Louis Cardinals were division contenders for the last handful of years, and the Cardinals went to the World Series was because, and for longer that with the Cardinals, because beyond Pujols, they had other players. Last year, Bergman. Before that, it might have been Jim Edmonds, whoever it might be, Matt Holliday. But it was more than just the one guy. And so for McCutchen to do what he has done is phenomenal to think about. He continues to hit despite the fact that up until Alvarez, nobody else was going to hurt this team, the opposition, other than McCutchen. Now What excites me is to think about if other players do start to come around, like an Alvarez or a Walker and others. There's going to be other guys in that lineup that when they have the scout for each series, you can't just say, hey, you know, McCutcheon, don't let him beat you. Whatever you do, pitch around him. Now it's, hey, you know, watch Alvarez, watch Barajas, watch these other guys. They can hurt you. That's why I believe that with this pitching we talked about, you get a little bit of balance in not only the staff, but now in the offense. You talk about a team that, without question, has a chance to win a whole heck of a lot beyond late July, well into August and into September.
One final point, Greg, then I'll let you go. If there's any area of the ball club that you look at and say, boy, if they could make this part better, this could be a really special summer, it's the on-base percentage. I think it's around 280, which is almost mind-boggling. If they can get that kicked up a little bit, in common, because last year you talked about the pitching went down, and part of that was the hitting couldn't compensate for it when it did happen. If they can get that taken care of, a little more patience at the plate, and get themselves on base, what can that mean theoretically for this team and what we're watching this summer?
Yeah, I would even say, Steve, that I would break it down further to say the leadoff man.
Yeah.
I'm watching Alex Presley. I want that on base percentage to go up for a while after your return. It was up there. And Tabata, the two of them. That's a two-headed monster there. The leadoff man, whether it's Tabata or Presley, those two guys have to start getting on base. I think the on-base percentage for guys like Alvarez probably isn't going to be great. Walker certainly should be better. It's gotten better, but I think of Neil Moore as an RBI-type guy. Barajas, the same thing. The Barmas, his on-base percentage is only going to be fair. But if you talk about the leadoff guys, and maybe the one, two guys in the lineup, if it is Walker, but Presley and Tabata, get them on base so that Walker can move him over, so that if McCutcheon doesn't drive him in, Alvarez will, or maybe Garrett Jones quietly coming along, and even Casey McGee. That those on base percentages become even more important at the top. It's not only important, but it's critical. I mean, the only way you're going to score runs is to get guys on base beyond an Andrew McCutcheon. Somebody has to drive somebody other than McCutcheon in, and those guys have to get on base. So I'm watching that very carefully. It's extremely important, extremely critical, that on-base percentage does climb. In general, as a team, the average and the on-base percentage has slowly crept up in the month of June. In fact, the Pirates are no longer the worst hitting team in the National League. It's the Padres now. So just slowly but surely, it's creeping up. It was historically bad in April and May, so it's going to take some time before they creep up at all in that regard. And the other area, Steve, if somebody were to say, what area of the team do you think needs to get better for them to truly be considered deep into this summer contender? It's the bench. It's the pinch hitters. Right now, they've done nothing. And I think that might be the one area that Neil Huntington is looking at. You know, Jordy Mercer is a backup shortstop right now. But I think Jordy Mercer is best served for the organization playing every day at AAA Indianapolis until he becomes an everyday player in the big leagues. Matt Haig, you know, he might be able to serve a role as a bench guy. He is fearless, and he can deliver a pinch hit now and again. But, boy, would I like to see somebody, I don't know who it would be, somebody out there with a veteran presence that could come off the bench and pose somewhat of a threat when he's on deck, that might be able to hit the ball out of the ballpark. One or two guys like that, I would love to see them improve as we go into July and before the trade deadline.
Great points, Greg, and I appreciate your time, and you know the tremendous respect I have for your work. You're one of the best, and we appreciate the time that you gave us here today.
Well, likewise, Steve. Certainly the feeling is mutual. Thanks so much, and I look forward to talking to you down the road.
Greg Brown, play-by-play voice of the Pirates. Second hour of the show coming up after the top of the hour on WKOK.